objects of the final object, you see. I mean, it's pretty.
So there are hardly any natural transformations.
So there really it just boils down to giving increasing maps between ordered sets, you see, that commute with finite infs and finite soups.
And therefore, there are practically no morphisms in Hom delta of RC, because the morphisms are the natural transformations between the delta functors from R to C, and they're unique. That's, again, an ordered, or at least a preordered category, Hom, yes, underlying delta of RC. Well, a preordered category can't go non-faithfully into anything.
What do you mean?
Every functor on a preordered category is faithful.
There's only one. Oh, there's only one R.
You say that Hom delta RC is an ordered category. I think you're right, yes. Yeah. And here, now I see your
that's
point.
Pretty right.
Yeah. So you say that this will be an ordered category if R is ordered. It seems so. And every functor from ordered category into any category is faithful. Yeah, that's quite right. And therefore, the condition is empty. And then, but you can't hope to get much if you take for I the empty set, I would say. Would you? I don't know. Maybe yes, you get it, you see, because you see, even if you take I to be empty, you see, the next step already is gets non-empty because you add limits to it, you see. And you keep adding limits. For instance, when let's look at the subsets of R that you obtain by each of these constructions. Every time, you get at least all those. You get at least all finite soups and finite m's of things that are already in.
You just if get you, the sublimits. You never get more, do you?
So you get what now? That's generated by the unit and the first and last element. That seems so, yeah.
Yeah.
Seems
that's
so,
what
it yeah. That's it. Yeah. Yes, so there's something apparently that. Yes, so apparently. We have to find out some stronger property on these sets I lying in R, I guess. Does your remark prove that this theory represented by R is not algebraic? If R is small, we have proved it is, you see. So.
As far as the complete lattice generated by three elements, then with appropriate d prime and d second, it is algebraic.
Whenever R is small, there's no trouble. But let's take a very big R, you see, now. I mean, let's say, the first ordinal that is not in the universe, and take the set of all smaller ordinals, you see. Now that's a U category, an ordered U category, and let's look at the theory it represents. I would think it is not. So it has the empty subset apparently generates it in the sense I have said, which is really too small, which is really too weak, and I'm pretty sure it's not algebraic. So therefore, there's some property I have been missing so far. So one has to look at the stepwise construction of algebraic series. We get at every time, we get category R and delta together with various possible choices of maps of functors from discrete categories into R. Now these seem to have stronger properties than what I just stated here. And one has to try to find out what they are. So something like saying that it generates, I think that's kind of the idea. Perhaps then the property would be that the kind of transfer transaction I try to sketch here should eventually lead to R. But then we have to check it in the cases that come up from algebraic series first. So there's quite evidently there's a point that is very shaky here that will have to be investigated. I'm sure there are many points.
A property that seems strong enough, and it seems like it might be right, is the impossibility of factoring the functor from I to R through the insertion of a full, I guess, subobject in delta of R. In other words, there is...
Let's take a two-monomorphism R prime goes to R and delta, which would mean that for every D in delta, the functor which goes from home underlined delta of D R prime into home underlined delta D R should be fully faithful, should be a full embedding. So then we call that this is a two-monomorphism. It's a kind of useful notion. So in the category of categories, instead of taking delta, we take the category of categories. This would just mean that this is fully faithful. All right. And then your condition then is that the given functor from the discrete category I into R, or any category, whether discrete or not, mine cannot be factored through any R prime except when this is an equivalence. Yeah. One should certainly expect this to be true. But I don't know if it would be strong enough. So the question is, with this transfinite direct system that I was suggesting, is it true that one finally winds up, you see, with full subcategories of R? If so, then this criterion would be good enough. I don't know. So, I mean, that's a really mathematical problem. What is the condition on a pair R, I and the function from I to R in order that this defines an algebraic structure with base objects I so that we can construct it stepwise, this silly R with base objects I by the process I've set, starting just with base objects I1 as a very first step and then keeping adding arrows and adding axioms.
Is this it precisely in the small case? It seems it must be. I mean, if R is small, you took I equals R, but you needn't have.
And then the same problem arises, that's true.
Yeah. Seems this.
Yeah, so the problem is interesting in any case. So apparently the faithfulness is just not strong enough of these functors. I think I don't have too much to add for today. You see, I think what we should do next, but perhaps it will be better to it another day, is now to look at examples. For instance, taking the case when D second is empty, just look at there are only inverse limits involved. And on the other hand, the examples I like most are those that are tied up with topoi.
Right.
Now, maybe we shouldn't start today because in a way it's
bring us to, will become kind of late.
Yes.
What about what we did so far, sir? Maybe there are some comments?
I think I'll feel better when I see more examples.
Yeah.
Make sure my intuition is running in the right
direction. Do you, does any one of you know of some good examples or counterexamples where the main universal problems 1 and 2 have solutions? So I kind of know that it works all right with finite inverse limits and exact left exact functions on the one hand, and with topoi on the other hand. Maybe we will try off, we will more or less check it on the blackboard, perhaps. But I don't know if it has been checked, for instance, for additive categories or Abelian categories or such thing. There are also the Karubian categories, which are kind of nice. Yeah.
The ones which are for what problem?
I think for these it's checked, in fact, that every projector has an image or what amounts to the same kernels of the same. Yes.
I haven't figured it next week's timing. Could it be Monday instead of Tuesday? I'm supposed to teach at evening school at 6 o'clock on Tuesdays. So if it is the same Monday as well as Tuesday.
For me it's alright. It all ends up there. Fine. That means that if you come to our place, it would rather be on Tuesday than on Monday.
Whatever you like. Does it make a difference to me?
Yeah, because I think on Monday I would like to.
Okay.
Yeah, all right. So nobody knows any examples of such enveloping, let's say enveloping categories, for instance, enveloping additive categories, enveloping Abelian categories.
Don't you, I don't know how to. For additive categories, I mean, in the simple construction, I mean, the only thing that actually satisfies this condition.
There's a universal,
yeah, there's a universal additive category.
Additivizing a small category, there's no problem.
How do you do it? Can you explain it?
You just generate, leave the objects alone. Oh, wait a minute.
No, that would
be. I'm using additive, and Barry and I use additive.
The one where you just have an Abelian group structure on every object, of course, you can do that.
No, that's not it. That wouldn't be exactly the
same. You want the product.
I want the initial object, final object. I want them to be isomorphic. I mean, that's a morphism which goes from the initial object to the final object should be an isomorphism. And then, of course, let me explain the situation perhaps. It's kind of cute because in some instances, Abelian categories or additive categories are defined as extra structural categories, whereas in fact one can do it in a nicer way intrinsically. So what are the main features about an additive category? So it first has an initial object. It has a final object, so that's one is empty diag limit, empty finite inverse limit. Now, of course, there's always a unique morphism from the one into the other. In fact, there's a unique morphism from this into anything and from anything into this. So this is, for two reasons, it's unique. And first of all, we want this to be an isomorphism. Now, second, we want also that sums and finite products should exist. Now, if you look at the sum of two objects, let's say, the same as any finite family, but let's take two. And if you look at the product of two objects, then we have a canonical morphism from the sum into the product, because we have to show that we have a morphism from the sum into X and into Y, separately. And how do we map it into X? In order to make X plus Y into X, we have to map separately X into X, I can take the identity, and Y into X. And for this, I take the zero morphism. Now, for every two objects, the zero morphism is defined between these two objects by taking just a compositor. This here is a is a unit on both sides. And there's just one morphism from Y to E and one morphism from E into X if E is this common object. All right. And so I do the same thing for the other factor. So there's a canonical morphism like this. And I want, moreover, that this canonical morphism should be an isomorphism. Now, when I have expressed this together, all these, of course, are exactness axioms. This also can be expressed in a different way by saying that every object of the category has at least one monoid structure and has at least, do we need to say it? No. And perhaps we should say also that every object has at least one comonoid structure. And if this is so, then the monoid structure and the comonoid structure in any object are uniquely determined. I mean, there exists in every object exactly one monoid structure, exactly one comonoid structure. This depends familiarly on with the object. And moreover, if you have two objects, Y and X, the monoid structure in homo YX can be excellently described as being the one that comes from the monoid structure of X or from the comonoid structure of Y. And in fact, these monoids will be necessarily commutative. I mean, all this comes out of a common lemma due to Ekman, I think. But we can also express it directly on this diagram, what the comonoid and monoid structures are. We have to give a morphism from X times X into X, and we recall that X times X is the same thing as X some X, and of course there's a co-diagonal map. And then we show immediately that this is a group structure, is a monoid structure, I'm sorry, and in effect a commutative monoid structure. And conversely, we want, in order to define a comonoid structure, the first thing we want to do is to define a morphism from X into the sum. But the sum is the same thing as a product, and we have a diagonal map. So far we have not quite expressed that we have an additive category. The semi-additive category is an additive category if these structures are a group structure, or what amounts to the same, if these monoids are groups. Now, how are we to represent this as an exactness axiom? Well, it's just by expressing that certain monoids are groups. I think we have already make the exercise. Mm-hmm. That the monoid being a group, that every monoid being a group is an exactness axiom. So that's just the axiom of the category that every monoid in it is a group. And then let's look at the Hilbert category for groups. But how do they express that the monoid is a group? By saying that a certain map which goes from G times G to G times G is an isomorphism. And what is this map? XY goes to XXY, something like
yes.
This. Yes.
Or also on both sides, two of them.
XY goes to, so we have two L's, it should be isomorphisms. XY, comma Y, something like this.
Mm-hmm.
No, that shouldn't be it.
I'll give you whichever way it is.
Why
you left and right. Left and right, I'll give you left and right.
Uh-huh. Yes. So I mean, that's, you can just write down if you want in this category by saying that X times X maps into X times X by X comma Y mapped into X comma X plus Y. Let's write it additively because it's cumulative monoid. That this should be an isomorphism. So certain arrows write isomorphisms. Now, certainly if you have now an arbitrary category, to make it additive, you see, you really have to add objects, that's pretty,
okay.
That's pretty clear. Final object, initial object, sums. I don't know if it's so clear. However, I mean, the kind of construction I would expect to give the answer is, if I take the analogy with what works well for finite inverse limits or for topoi, we might like to take something like all functors from C into abelian groups, let's say, and work out some subcategory of this. But we have, of course, to say how a C is mapped into it. But maybe we take every object of C defines a functor, a parental functor, and we may look at the free abelian group functor defined or something like this. And then the subcategory generates. I mean, maybe there might be some pretty simple construction, you see.
Probably not that simple when you have both direct and inverse limits involved.
I don't think so, no. But if you have only finite inverse limits involved, then there's a nice construction for the loping category of a category. But here, for additive categories, it's a nice set of axioms which is auto-dual. And being auto-dual, I'm at a loss whether to take Cobain or not. It should be a, I mean, I wonder if it helps you see. It would be nice if you had a direct treatment of such simple cases. It's not sure that it helps to solve the general problem. Maybe it gives some clues as to how to attack it. Yeah.